I love the colorful clothes you wear, and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. On the wind that lifts her perfume through the air, I'm picking up her vibration. She's giving me the excitation. I'm backing up. Hello, I'm Solazar, and welcome to Good Vibrations Radio, Tools for Transformation, right here on Radio Monterey. Now, quantum physics tells us that we are all energy vibrating at different frequencies, and in Good Vibrations Radio, we bring you information that allows you to change the vibrational frequency of your life. We are your source for everyday alchemy, so you can take the lead in your life and turn it into gold. Good Vibrations Radio is made possible through the sponsorship of Magic for Life, which is the owner-operator of Radio Monterey, bringing you information unfiltered, uncensored by the corporate media. Visit RadioMonterey.com. Take a look at the shows and the hosts. Get engaged, get informed, get involved, and get the information that you can use to make better choices in your life. In addition, Magic for Life is also the promoter-producer of the Rhoda Psychic Fair. It's been in the Monterey County area in California for over 35 years, and it's coming back to the Monterey Fairgrounds October 29th and 30th. Yes, yes, it's right there, right around the corner from Samhain and Halloween and All Saints Day and All Souls Day and the Day of the Dead, the time when the veils between the worlds are thin, and that means only one thing. It's time to have some fun. So you can come in costume, come as who you might have been, come as actually who you are, come as who you might become. But we want you to show on up and have some fun. Visit rhodapsychicfair.com, get on the email list so you can be informed of the ongoing events that are going on throughout the year, and also so you can be reminded October 29th and 30th is our big event at the Monterey Fairgrounds. Now, yesterday on Good Vibrations Radio, Kirilani shared her go with the flow about the energy for the week, and I also shared a lot about the astrological guidance. There's a couple of points I'm going to touch on, but before I do that, you know me, and I love me some Day by Day with James Allen. Now, in 1903, James Allen wrote his essay, or released his essay, As a Man Thinketh. It was based on chapter 23, verse 7 of Proverbs that says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. James Allen wanted us to really focus on the fact that we, our reality today is a direct outcome of our past thoughts and actions. We've created it. No matter what's happened externally, we made all the choices that brought us to this point. At the same time, each and every day, when we wake up, is a new opportunity to start crafting our tomorrow. Each and every day is an opportunity to create a new future, because it's based on the thoughts and actions we start taking in the present moment. Our future is not predicted by our past. Our past is created now. And in Day by Day by James Allen, with James Allen, his words have been broken up to a little segment for each day of the month. And for the 24th day of the month, he shares, problems bring lessons. As a progressive and evolving being, man is where he is that he may learn and he may grow. And as he learns the spiritual lesson which any circumstances contain for him, it passes away and gives place to other circumstances. Now, I don't know about you, but certainly I needed to hear that today. I am suffering from a series of losses and griefs over the last several years that have their own cycles, especially in the last 6 months or so, and they keep coming back and regenerating themselves as I go through a system of clearing. So I have to remember that everything has a lesson that gives way.
And when we work on trying to understand the lesson and not allow ourselves to delve into the pain of the circumstances, not to live with the pain, then we allow ourselves to heal and move on. As you know, I always share Daily Word as well, and it says, healing power flows through me to bless myself and others. So those two certainly synchronistically go together well today. Problems bring lessons. As a progressive and evolving being, man is where he is that he may learn, that he may grow. And as he learns the spiritual lesson which any circumstances contains for him, it passes away and gives place to other circumstances. Healing power flows through me to bless myself and others. So no matter where you are on your journey, for life is a journey for all of us, no matter where you are, remember that it's the lessons and the learnings that we gain from what occurs to us and not the living in the pain, the anxiety, the fear, or the trauma that allows us to move beyond it and move to that new place, that new future, that new beyond that is there waiting for all of us. Now, going into this month of May, we know we had an experience unlike any others. We had five planets in retrograde. On the 16th, Jupiter moved direct in Virgo. So Jupiter, our planet of beneficence and opportunity and success, moved out of retrograde 2 weeks ago. Sunday, Mercury went direct in Taurus. It had been retrograde during that time, and so communications, electronics issues will ease up, communications will ease up, and we may need to go back and redo some conversations we did during the retrograde period in case we laid waste to people around us. But today, we have a couple of things going on. We have Venus entering Gemini. Now, we know the Sun went into Gemini on Friday, you know, and then we had our full moon in Sagittarius on Saturday, which was a powerful Gemini-Sagittarian influence on us. But now we have Venus going into Gemini. So just as our minds and mouths from Mercury direct are starting to loosen up and get more familiar, our brain is getting more clarity, our mouth is being more expressive of exactly what it is we're trying to say. Now we're going to have Venus following suit, and it's going into a slightly superficial sign of Gemini, but it's going to actually open the door for connections, social interactions, for being around and with other people. Don't expect for this to allow you to find the love of your life. It's not that type of an energy, but it is an energy for us to create better heart connections with others in a casual and comfortable type of way. So get yourself out, meet people, do things. Don't expect that this is going to be the deepening love connections with existing relationships or new relationships that goes really deep. This is not a time for deep philosophical discussions either. It's just good things on the surface. We also today have Venus in Gemini is going to oppose that Mars in Sagittarius. Now, Mars, of course, is still retrograde. It's one of our three retrograde planets, and it's going to stay retrograde until June 29th. As a matter of fact, later this week, Mars will move into Scorpio, which is not going to be a good thing. Mars and Sagittarius and Mars and Scorpio ain't so good for me, but either way, I have to live through them and take my lumps like everyone else. But we're going to find ourselves having this push-pull action going on with both wanting to get out and not wanting to get out. So we're going to have our Venus in Gemini, and now with the opposition against Mars in Sagittarius, we're going to have this push-pull. We may find ourselves getting cleaned and dressed and ready to go and not being able to open the door and get out. We might find ourselves getting out and driving by the place where we were going to go. We might find ourselves going into the place and not wanting to talk to anybody. Just expect that that energy is natural. Don't condemn yourself, damn yourself, or judge yourself. It's just a natural push-pull energy going on right now. If you're in any committed relationships, don't use this time to push for changes. because both of you are going to be in a place where you're not going to be able to look beyond the surface interaction. It's going to feel like judgment. It's going to feel like conflict. It's going to feel aggressive. Go easy. As I said yesterday, this is a time for gentleness and kindness for all of us. On Thursday, we're going to have Jupiter and Virgo squaring Saturn and Sagittarius, but I'm going to talk about that on Thursday because it is time for us to get to the meat of today's show. Today, we're going to speak with William Martin. He's the author of 6 books of Tao Te Ching, including titles highlighting parenting, love, aging, and caregiving. And today, we're going to speak with him about his latest book, The Activist, Tao Te Ching. So please, everyone, let's welcome William Martin to Good Vibrations Radio. Welcome, William.
Thank you very much, and it'll be real comfortable if you call me Bill.
Hey, Bill, yes, actually, I picked that up from our earlier thing, and yes, I will certainly call you Bill. I will call you whatever you choose.
If I need, you know, sometimes if I really need a big dose of dignity and protection, I'll say William. But, you know, mostly it's just Bill.
Well, yes, sir, I certainly understand that. Now, you are very heavily, you're a Taoist, I guess. Is that a correct statement to make or correct way?
Oh, you know, it's if I had, you know, a gun pointed to my head and I had to describe myself with one word, I'd probably say Taoist, but that's misleading too. I'm just a human being alive. In China, there are two strains, out of ancient China, there are two strains of Taoist thought. One is very much a religion. It has all the bells and whistles of a folk religion. It has gods and goddesses and temples and rituals and beliefs. And if you were to go to a Chinese temple in America today, it would be a Taoist temple. But there's another strain of Taoist thought in China, originated about 2,500 years ago with a philosopher named Lao Tzu, and it's called Quietist or Philosophical Taoism, and it's just a philosophy. It's not a religion. It's not. It has no sets of beliefs, and its only books are the little short book, The Tao Te Ching, by Lao Tzu, and a couple of later on books by his students, Chuang Tzu and Lao Tzu. And so when I call myself a Taoist, I'm from that strain. It's a philosophy for me, not a complicated religion. Did I over-answer your question?
Oh, absolutely. And when did you first encounter the Tao and choose to make it a course of study for your life?
That was an accident, and golly, it's 50 years ago now. I can't believe how old I get. It was in the late 60s, and I had just graduated from university and was working for the Navy and was taking a required course in self-defense. And the teacher was an Oriental gentleman, and he noticed I was kind of struggling, and he came over to me one day and said, "This doesn't fit you, does it?" And I said, "Well, no." And he said, "You might like Tai Chi." And Tai Chi is a kind of a flowing meditative movement. It's martial in its origins, but it's usually practiced very much as a meditation. And I loved it, and he started to teach me that. And then he gave me a little book, and he said, "This Tai Chi is the physical expression of this little book." And the book was The Tao Te Ching. And it was just this little book of 81 short poems, and some of them I sort of understood, some of them I didn't understand at all, but it just stuck with me. And I've had that little book in dozens of translations, and including my own, over the past decades, and it's just always been the foundation of my life. Even as I grew and took my own journey, I went through Christian church, and even after when I finished being an engineer with the Navy, I went to seminary, and that didn't fit for me very well. I perambulated through different paths, as many people do, but that little book just was with me all the time. And finally, about 20 years ago, I just decided that, you know, I'm through with trying to find my place. I've had my place with me all this time. And so I just stopped trying to fit in and became okay. I became a Taoist and started. I had been in practice as a psychotherapist, and I just started writing from the Tao Te Ching and wrote a little book about the Tao Te Ching for parents, and that did real well. And I just kept trying to express the wisdom I felt in the Tao Te Ching for certain people in today's life. And so about, 15 years ago, Nancy and I just kind of, she at the time was a Methodist minister and I was in private practice as a therapist, and we just sold everything and gotten our belongings into an 8.5 by 5 U-Haul trailer and went to the mountains. We still kind of have to earn a living. We live quite simply, but we're just, Nancy is a traditional hand bookbinder. Mm. She binds special editions of books and repairs books, and she has her studio in our home, and I continue to write and teach just a little bit. And okay, that brings me up. Here I'm sitting on my, looking out on my porch and talking to you.
I understand you also paint.
Yes, I paint in the Taoist tradition, the simple monochromatic brush strokes. I'm certainly not a skilled at it, but it's a wonderful meditation for me. And occasionally sell a painting. And I've illustrated some of the publishers have graciously given Nancy permission to hand bind gift editions of some of my books.
Mm.
And I've painted the kind of Taoist illustrations for those hand bound gift books.
Mm.
They continue to sell my books in paperback, but Nancy has the permission to hand bind the special editions, and I've done the paintings for that. We love books. We just love books.
Yeah, it may be a lost love at some point, but I'm with you there. I think books just have a power that nothing
yeah.
else.
Well, you know, it's interesting in the age of digital production of books. More and more people have been coming to Nancy with wanting to preserve their books.
Wonderful.
It's almost like it's a lost art, but it's getting to be a more appreciated art. The more books, some people feel the books might be in danger of disappearing, they're starting to value their hardbound books. And so she had been doing quite a bit of repair work.
You know, you mentioned that there's two parts to Taoism. I didn't realize, in my own ignorance, that there was an actual religious aspect of the Tao. For years, I've always admired the idea of the Tao as more of a way or an approach, as a guide, but not as a dogma.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So what is the actual meaning of Tao Te Ching? Did I say that?
Tao has many meanings in Chinese history. It can mean such a simple meaning as a path through the woods, or the walkway up to your front door, a road, a way of going from one place to another. But it also, throughout Chinese history, has had the more philosophical and religious meaning of the great way that life unfolds itself, the great way of the universe, the it's a word to describe the mystery of existence. And so it's the way, and so it can be the way through the woods, but also the way of life. And in the book's title, te de means the natural quality or the natural virtue or power that is inherent in every living being, actually in every part of the universe. And it's not something that being has to create. It's just a natural part of them. It's their natural place and power in the universe. And Ching just means book. So the actual title of the little book, the Tao Te Ching, means the book of the way of natural living or natural virtue or the book of the way of power, all those kind of various meanings for it.
It almost seems as if the modern metaphysical form of flow, going with the flow, really a bastardization of really the title of the Tao Te Ching, in one sense, with the exception of Ching.
Very much it is. Everybody likes the idea of going with the flow, but that's a real caricature of what Lao Tzu would have understood.
I agree with that.
It was much more. There's a phrase in Chinese that wu wei. And it literally means not doing, and it implies an effortless doing of life, but not a hands-off, go with the flow. It's the kind of doing that people experience when, for whatever reason, the ego kind of gets checked aside, and they just do what they're doing. People experience it, working in the garden or, everybody has that experience in all sorts of ways of all of a sudden looking up and you realize that hours and hours have passed and you haven't really been aware of it because you've been absorbed in the doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I often feel that sometimes when people are talking about going with the flow or just being with the flow, it gets adopted to me very similar to the way people 15 and 20 years ago were saying, think outside the box. Outside the box, people always meant is, I need you to think more like I want you to think. That's really what they meant.
Yeah.
I think people say, you need to go with the flow. They're not understanding your situation in the moment. And I think the way is saying, find your place.
That's a good way of putting it.
And allow yourself to move through life with your place.
Yeah.
Versus when people are saying, go with the flow, here's what I think you need to do.
Yes.
Because you're not doing it.
Stop resisting me and do what I want you to do.
Exactly. Or you should be letting go and not having attachment to that. Well, thank you. I appreciate you pointing that out to me because I haven't found my way yet with that.
Or sometimes it means, I'm going to just go with the flow, meaning I'm not going to think about this right now. It's too scary for me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I need another bowl of ice cream.
Yeah.
That's just going flowing.
Yep, just flowing, absolutely. The flow told me I needed another bowl of ice cream.
But in the activist Tao Te Ching, Ancient Advice for a Modern Revolution, you're actually encouraging us to recognize that the Tao Te Ching is not about passive living.
Yeah.
It's about active living.
Yeah.
What led you to choose to write the activist Tao Te Ching, Ancient Advice for a Modern Revolution at this time?
Several tipping points in my own life and the observation of tipping points in the world in general. I mean, this is a scary time if you look out at the political situation in the United States. And
I'm sorry, I don't look.
Neither do I. But for looking's not going to do me any good, but the sense that we all have a sense of we're just going in so many wrong directions and you wonder if humanity is going to survive, and then I get flipped back over to the the caricature of the Tao Te Ching, of, well, I'm just gonna not pay any attention and go with the flow. And I've always loved the quietest element of the Tao Te Ching, the sense that life should be accepted just as it is, and only in accepting it completely as it is will we see clearly what changes are ours to begin to make without imposing our own agenda and trying to get our own way. So many times what people mean when they say, I want to change the world, they mean, I want the world to behave more in the way that I want it to behave. Mm-hmm. And the quietest element of the of Taoist thought is, first, I accept the world as it is. Then I accept myself as I am. And out of that quiet place of deep acceptance arises a sense of what's mine to do right now, right here. One of Lao Tzu's famous verses is, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. So what's mine to do right here in this step that's in front of me right now? And so out of my deep appreciation for the quiet, peaceful contentment that Lao Tzu talks about, I begin to see that the natural step for me to take was to become more engaged in those things that are mine to be engaged in. And so out of that struggle for a couple of years, I realized that every chapter of the Tao Te Ching contains a seed that's really revolutionary, that if lived out in people's lives would turn society upside down. Things like leaders should be servants and not seen, that contentment comes from not having a lot, life can be more can be accomplished without agenda than can be accomplished with having an agenda. The more rules we have, the more rule breakers we become. The more we become concerned with being wealthy, the more we get tied up. The more we just get tied up in knots over and over and over again. And so Lao Tzu was actually considered by historians one of the first anarchists.
Mm.
And he was quite opposed to the Confucian order of the time. 2,500 years ago, China was in the beginning of the Warring States period, when the economy was such that the wealth was flowing from the rural villages into the cities, consolidating in the hands of a very few. People were leaving work and taking jobs instead of in natural work. And Lao Tzu spoke quite contrary to all of this consolidation of wealth and accumulation of wealth and power. And he was considered an anarchist. He was considered unpatriotic. He was branded as the person you don't want your children to associate with. He was a troublemaker. And he was deeply loved by the peasant, the farmer, the forester, the ordinary person, but he was deeply distrusted by those who were consolidating a sense of control. And so in every chapter, as he talks about, you know, the way to live naturally, he implies that to do so would be a revolutionary act. And sometimes he's very direct about it, that a society with all these rules and regulations and accumulation of power is contrary to the Tao. That contentment comes naturally, not through having things. That stillness can be far more effective and a far more effective action than constantly pushing and prodding and urgency. That fluid movement and flexibility can be far stronger than rigidity and argument. that the fewer words you use, the more effective you might be. One of his most famous, another one of his famous verses is, those who speak don't know, those who know don't speak.
Mm.
And here I've been speaking for about at least 25 years about Taoism, which sometimes makes me think that, you know, you might get an idea that I don't know anything at all. But
no, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think that certainly, as many of the verses are in the Tao Te Ching, there's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Depends on whether you understand it with your mind or with your heart.
Oh, that's a good point. Yes, exactly.
You know,
that's the beauty of poetry. I think that's why he wrote in poetry.
Yeah, and so I think when we understand with our heart, we get out of the place of power.
Uh-huh.
When we understand with our mind, we're looking for the place of power.
Yeah.
Just my opinion. And you point out, and what I want to share for the listeners who haven't seen the book yet, it is the Tao Te Ching, but you have added a little paragraph. I'm going to say a little paragraph, but a paragraph underneath each verse to kind of help others understand some of the applications or ideas that this may apply to in today's modern society.
Yeah, and even the verses themselves are not the Tao Te Ching. In this book, I've lived with each chapter of the Tao Te Ching, and then I kind of lay it aside and I attempt to express the same theme, but not to translate the words. So
mm-hmm.
each chapter, I'll try to express the theme in my own poetry and my own images. So it's not anywhere. It's not at all a translation, not even a paraphrase. It's just it follows the format of the Tao Te Ching, and I try to express each theme, but it's not the Tao Te Ching. It's it's the activist Tao Te Ching. It's my own words.
And one, for instance, that you share is controlled by wanting. It says, we've come to believe that stress, strain, fear, and the struggle to get ahead are normal. And I think that goes to the heart of what you've been sharing with us, that we've built a society where we essentially honor the Donald Trumps of the world as if there's something admirable.
Yes.
About their life or their expression, and yet they truly represent my opinion, my judgment, and for those listening to the show, I doubt that you're going to find it surprising, truly represent the representable aspects of our society. They're not giving, they're not sharing, they're not empathetic, they're not connected. It's all about them.
Yeah.
And we've built a society that boosts them up.
Oh yeah, this is our vision of a leader, and of power,
and as you point out, both in here and in your online interview, you know, Lao Tzu said that the best leader is when at the end people say, "We did this together."
Yeah,
that didn't recognize that there was necessarily someone leading or directing, and yet. For those into power, that's not their mode, because the power mode is about them getting the recognition.
Yes, and we're very complicit in that process, because that's the view of power and leadership that we've been, you know, socialized into accepting.
One of the ideas about power that I learned from a mentor of mine, a magician by the name of Jeff McBride, and it's not direct from him. He actually quotes someone else, and I just don't remember whom he quotes, but is that power pushes down and strength builds up. And each of us, in looking at our life, should be looking at where are we being strong, both for ourselves and others, and where are we essentially exercising power and pushing down.
Yeah, that's a very good point. The leadership that we probably subconsciously long for is that gentle, and maybe power's an uncomfortable word to use. Lao Tzu uses the image of the force and the fluidity of water, as it's always seeking the lowest place, and it flows around any obstacle. It will evaporate and rain on the other side, and the most rigid can't stand up against the fluidity and the essential natural power of water. So he always urges people to use that metaphor of the fluidity and the gentleness of water as really irresistible.
Hmm. It will wear down anything over time.
It can wear down anything over time, and until it wears it down, it's perfectly content to just keep seeping and doing its water thing. So it's a very, very revolutionary idea. I very much believe we need, it's not that we need, that we're in the midst of a revolutionary time, because the Tao, the force of the Tao will restore balance to societies and environments. Whether there'll be a place for humanity when that's done will kind of depend on our own willingness to shape ourselves according to that fluid flow of the Tao.
You know, you share in the price at the bottom after the poem, you share, our work must be nonviolent in order to succeed, but that doesn't mean it will be without sacrifice. And I think that goes to what you just shared. If we want to succeed or exist after the tumult, because we are in this time of great tumultuous change,
yes,
don't necessarily know what the outcome will be,
uh-huh,
and we probably can't force an outcome no matter what we think
no.
we can do.
No.
But if we want to be standing, like the reed that survives the storm,
yeah,
then we have to recognize, are we exercising ourselves, our actions, and our behavior in a nonviolent way?
Yes.
Because yes, we become a representative for others as a nonviolent approach.
Yes. The misunderstandings we have of Taoist thought and our misunderstandings of nonviolent revolution lead us to a sense of passivity. And you and I know that it's not passive. It's very involved and dangerous. It's a Gandhian kind of nonviolence.
Mm-hmm.
Gandhi was influenced by Lao Tzu's writings, and one of Gandhi's most powerful tools in the Indian Revolution was what he called non-cooperation. And that is, we will not take British jobs, we will not take British money, we will not buy British products, we will not go to British schools, we will not accept British honors, etc., etc. We will not cooperate in any way, but we will love these people. And that's dangerous. That led to death and imprisonment and great, great sacrifice. And so when we talk about a nonviolent revolution, we don't mean a passive one. We mean one that is deeply, it requires deep courage and a willingness, one, to live simply so that we're not controlled by the economic engines of our oppression, and two, so that we are willing to not cooperate. It's almost like when I was a psychotherapist, one of the most difficult things to deal with was the abused spouse who would stay in abusive situations when you couldn't imagine why would you stay in this abusive situation? Because it requires a great deal of courage to leave, because in that situation you get so used to the abuse and so conditioned with the idea that if there was just something I could do a little bit better or a little bit more, if I could be just a little bit more patient, if I could be a little bit more understanding, if I tried harder, I could somehow change this person so that they wouldn't be who they actually are. And until they woke up to the fact that they were truly being abused and that nothing they could do would change this person, were they willing to think, I've got to step out of this. But even then it was hard, because stepping out of that situation that they're so used to means stepping into an unknown territory, groundlessness and fear, and this may be awful for me, but I don't know what's on the other side of it. If I step out of it, it might be even worse. And so we're constantly being pulled back into an abusive social and political situation, because we're being told that if we tried just a little bit harder, and if we were just a little bit more patient, and if we worked just a little bit harder on a campaign, or if we marched a little bit more or something, we could somehow make this something other than what it is. And to take the kind of courage of saying, no, I'm not going to cooperate with this abusive situation anymore, means stepping out into I don't know what. And it's terrifying. And so we don't do it.
And unfortunately, going back to what you shared earlier, very often, but not stepping out means just saying, I'll just sit back here and do nothing.
Yeah.
That's not what you want us to do with the activist Tao Te Ching.
No, it isn't.
You know, so what is your ideal vision? I won't say outcome, but your ideal vision of what people will do with the words and the advice from the activist Tao Te Ching.
One, I hope that they find some sense of peace and comfort, because I try to communicate, I think as Lao Tzu did, that regardless of the turmoil and the frightening nature of situations, that we are irreversibly and permanently part of the Tao. We are part of one thing happening. We're connected to the from the moment of the Big Bang and the explosion of stars that expanded the atoms that now make up our bodies. We're part of this whole thing. And we always will be, and we can't not be. So I hope that I communicate a mystical sense of, it's okay, we're part of this, we just do what we do. Then I hope out of that sense of a mystical and a sense of one thing, of a unity, I hope I communicate that it's okay then to take the next small step that's yours to take. And only you can determine that. No political party, no ranting or raving from one side or the other, no voice of shame in your own mind that's trying to get you to be a better person can really tell you. Only in the quiet, deep awareness of what's going on in your life right at this moment will you have the knowledge of the little step today, right now, I mean right now, when you finish listening to this broadcast, or even before you finish listening to this broadcast, what's in front of you? Are you going to go to the ice cream freezer? Are you going to read a book? Are you going to think? Are you going to meditate? Are you going to go visit a friend? I have no idea. But what's yours to do right now that begins that little small step on creating for yourself a life of revolutionary change? If you don't want revolutionary change, then you probably won't want to do anything. But if you're like hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people that I know at some level are realizing that revolution is necessary, imperative, and unavoidable, what's the small step? It involves the way you use your money. It involves the way you use your time. What you're looking for from life, what makes you content, what really makes you content, what's a happy life, do you need what you have, what do you need to be happy? Who do you need to be around? Who do you want to be around? what kind of world do you want to live in? Not so that you're shaming yourself or putting pressure on yourself, but just so that you're gradually and quietly becoming aware of the kind of life you want to live and then taking the next step to do that. Very well could be taking the first step of planting a garden. One of the most revolutionary steps in World War II in Britain was the Victory Gardens. From a country that was totally dependent on imported goods, by the end of the war, they produced more of their own food than they imported. Just those little steps of a backyard garden, or a visit to a food bank, or a withdrawal of my energy from a dysfunctional institution. I think I've over-answered your question. And
there is no over-answer. Please don't even.
I get my, you know, I hear the little conditioned voice in my head that says, "Shut up, Bill."
No, not necessary. It's not necessary. This is about what you have to share for us. But we're here to hear what you have to share. Now, I know Lao Tzu is saying, hey, he's talking. He may not know. For those who are listening, that goes back to a Lao Tzu quote. I'm not insulting our guest. But I actually think that there is a real blessing for people who have studied and have experienced and understand things at an integrated level the way you do, to share that information with us so we can take our kernels from it and move on.
I agree.
And I think that's part of also the gift of the activist Tao Te Ching, Ancient Advice for a Modern Revolution, is that there are kernels in there. You don't have to know it all, study it all, integrate it all. You just have to go through and you'll find your kernels and they'll jump out. And that starts precipitating a change. And every change, you can let me know how you think about this, but for me, every change is a revolution if it's a change of action.
Oh, absolutely. I was just flipping through the book and I looked at chapter 15. I'm going to read the poetic part if you don't mind. It's kind of that feeling. It's called Unlikely Rebels. Those who would truly change the world do not seem like rebels. They are deliberate and careful, aware of every nuance and movement around them. They are kind and courteous in conversation. There is a lovely simplicity about them, something selfless and disarming, welcoming and accepting, and above all, clear. They are willing to wait patiently until proper action arises by itself. Then they move with surprising swiftness and power. Though their lives are at risk, they are calm and unworried because they are truly free. Then my comment is, this revolution is like none that has come before. This one will happen with or without our help. Thus, we are free to act without needing to push, pull, force, or convince. Our muscles will be relaxed, our speech will be gentle, and our actions will be filled with power. And that's an image of the way I'd like to live my life and encourage other people. Although I love wearing my Che Guevara T-shirt, we're not the violent revolutionaries. It's going to be something that just happens in and of itself, and that therefore we don't have to be afraid. There's an old Zen story that I love, that I think illustrates the power of this. The Zen master was in the village that had been conquered by an invading army, and he just sat still in his hut and didn't worry about it. And then the general of that invading army came storming into his hut, drew out his sword, and yelled at the Zen master, "Stand up, you fool! Don't you realize that you're in the presence of someone who could cut off your head without blinking an eye?" And the master just looked up at him and stayed seated and said, "And don't you realize that you're in the presence of someone who could have his head cut off without blinking an eye?" And the general dropped his sword and became the master's disciple.
Well, I think you touched on something as you led into this, too, that I want to quickly go back to. It's something I emphasize often on the show, is that even listening, people listening to what you're sharing and what you're expressing may think they have to go out and start changing their local school board, or have to start changing their local election, or have to be involved in a national campaign. Uh-huh. And what it all comes down to, going back to the point of action, is that we take action immediately in our life,
mm-hmm.
in our little circle and zone,
mm-hmm.
of how we go back to what you shared in Chapter 15, of how we're willing to wait, how we're willing to be kind and courteous to others, how we're willing to express ourselves, acting deliberate and careful, and move with power and speed when necessary. We have to look at ourselves and saying, are we expressing kindness and care in our conversation with others? Are we always becoming an expression of the best of ourselves in our interactions with others and in what we're doing in the world? And in that way, I believe, we become a modern revolutionary. And we persist no matter what people present to us.
Yeah. I don't think there's any other way of doing revolution. I really don't. I'm quite a fan of the Gandhi revolution, as I've mentioned, in India, even though it's been co-opted almost entirely by a modern economic force. But it was a very powerful revolution because Gandhi was able to touch a deep, thousands of years old understanding in the hearts of the Indian people of simplicity and sacrifice and what true power was. So when he called for a return to homespun clothing, people knew what he was talking about, and they knew how to do it. And when he called for a life of radical simplicity, he wasn't talking to people who didn't know what he meant. The difficulty today is when we talk about taking radical steps, we live in such a confused society that we're not aware of. Most of us are kind of separate from our ancestral traditions of contentment and simplicity. So it's more confusing for us to know what to do. It's more confusing for us to know how to go about revolutionary living. And so we have to be kind of patient with ourselves.
Mm.
We'll figure this out as we go along, but we don't have very many models. However, having said that, you can find lots of models in our society, even here in America today, of people who are figuring it out, who are being creative in the ways they're living, the way they're earning their living, the way they're going about their housing and their occupations and their schooling and their parenting and their relationships. They're experimenting. Some of it's successful, some of it maybe not, but amidst all the political posturing, there are thousands and thousands of little pockets of quiet revolution. The tiny house movement, the simple living movement, the way people are growing and managing their food. On the occasion when I go into town and I'm able to use the internet a little bit, I kind of try to browse and find these pockets, and if I'm patient, I can find them. There's lots of encouraging things going on out there. However, the mainstream reporting of media would have you believe otherwise. Like you said, you try not to look at politics. Well, I would agree with you, but there's a lot of things out there that are worth looking at if you have the patience to find them.
Well, and I acknowledge that I said that facetiously. I do look. I do pay attention to what's going on. But I want to stress something going back to where you were coming from, again, for the listeners, is that they don't have to suddenly go to having their own garden, home spinning their own clothes, going down to smaller living, but they need to start making changes where they can in their life.
Yes.
And they don't suddenly have to undo everything,
mm-hmm.
which sometimes also seems to be the nature of people. It's, I've got to undo this. I can never do that again. Do the things. Walk into it. Make it a natural expression of who you are and your lifestyle.
Yeah.
And ultimately, we can all get to a place where we are the revolutionaries of a new society. The problem is we keep wanting, as you say in the book, we keep wanting more. We keep getting enticed by the idea of the new, the big, the shiny, the bold.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, is that really what gives me fulfillment in my life? And there's somebody out there right now that's going, it sure does.
You know, well, bless your heart. If it does, wonderful. But I'm going to ask you to continue to be willing to ask the question to you, of yourself tomorrow, does it really?
Yeah.
And then the next day, ask it again, does it really?
And I could see someone sitting in their house and say, well, my house does. I love my garden. That's mm-hmm. fine. Nobody's telling you to get rid of your house and garden.
Not at all. It's because if we start making those kind of prescriptions for people, it's like making them for our own lives. It's a setup for not doing anything.
Yeah, it's us telling them to go with the flow as we define it.
Yep. It's we do it to ourselves. It's a setup of our conditioned mind. Oh, you want a simpler life? I'll tell you how to do that. Here's what we'll do. First we'll do this, and then we'll do this, and then we'll do this, and by the time that part of my conditioned mind finishes talking to me, the other part of my conditioned mind is so fed up and so tired and so exhausted that it just turns off and goes and gets the ice cream. And it's part of a very conditioned way of making sure that I don't take action. Self-criticism is the primary tool of my socialized mind to keep me from taking action.
I've never heard that expression, but I appreciate you sharing that with us. And I think it's also, I think we have to recognize in our society right now is that so many people have spent so much time in so many different ways through life of trying to prescribe for us how we should think, feel, do, or be.
Yep.
And it's not easy for us just suddenly cast that all aside.
Yeah.
So I'm asking our listeners, when they go and get their activist Tao Te Ching and they go through it, to be gentle and kind with themselves also, to go to the changes where they can and to recognize that others are either a matter of time or not for them right now.
Yep. Very good. Very, very good advice.
And I'm a big one for simplicity and gentleness. And I think you've done that in the Activist Tao Te Ching, Ancient Advice for a Modern Revolution.
Good.
Really appreciate the conversation today and you taking all of this time to share your wisdom. Are there any final thoughts you'd like to share?
Well, people can reach me at my website, which is taoistliving.com, T-A-O-I-S-T, living.com. And you mentioned that I do have one event in August, Friday evening, August 5th, at Point Reyes in north of San Francisco. I'll be speaking at an event the Point Reyes bookstore is holding, and I'll be talking about the activists Tao Te Ching.
Okay. And we'll ask you to hold on a second as we let everybody know that Good Vibrations Radio will be back tomorrow at Wednesday at 5 to 6 with Wellness Wednesday with Sherry Dr. Felton. This show will replay 5 to 6 p.m. tonight. We want to thank you for listening to Good Vibrations Radio with Solazar and our special guest, William Martin, the activist Tao Te Ching, and Ancient Advice for a Modern Revolution. We wish you many blessings in your life. Namaste.
Gotta keep those loved ones, vibrations.